I'm Michelle Olivier, and you're listening to Hey, I Want Your Job, the podcast that looks at amazing jobs and what it takes to get them. Welcome to Hey, I Want Your Job. And this week, there is not enough money in the world for me to want your job. Samara, what is your job title?
Which of them?
The big one, the big impressive sparkly one.
I am CEO and founder of an event production company, and I also am director of events. I've done events all over and have worked with many hats, and I kind of jump in and I'm like a swooper.
You're a swooper. I feel like the job, I do want the job title of swooper. Can I be a swooper? That doesn't sound bad at all. Events, however, sounds like death warmed over to me. I mean, oh dear God. And the thing that is the most mystifying to me about this is that in my long career in recruitment, I have worked with so many people who are like, oh my God, I really want to work in events. It's so glamorous. Now, obviously, you look fantastically glamorous, but drop some truth bombs on us, Samara. Would you agree that one should enter the wild world of events for the glamour and the glitz?
So we're not actually the guests at the Academy Awards. We don't get the gifts. We are the ones running around with headsets, sweating profusely, in our heels, in a lot of pain, but doing it. And, you know, you just take a lot of ibuprofen, I guess. So yeah, you know, the glamour of it, I would say, is within our industry. So when we have our meetings and our galas and the things within the event industry, the awards that we have each year. So the conferences, getting together, because here's the secret. Event planners love to party. We do.
That makes sense, right? Because like technically that is a not small part of your job is planning partying. I've seen what you guys go through. Tell the studio audience, for the average major corporate event, roughly how many hours would you put in the week of the event?
Well, no sleep. So how many hours is that? You work around the clock, honestly, and you're on call. And it depends if your clients are international and what time zones everybody's on. You're honestly working all the time. And especially, you know, when you're in a city like New York City, which I've worked in for so many years. And so when you're in a city like that, it doesn't sleep. You are quite literally on call all the time. Here's the deal. When I decided I wanted to become an event planner and I contacted people, they all said to me, do you have 3 years of experience? I said, no. I mean, except for volunteering and doing my proms and my sorority events and all that. And then they said, you want to hear my word of advice? Yeah, please. I would love to hear it. Don't do it, because the burnout's between 3 to 5 years.
And that's like, I know career events people who have done it, and you all have like, I love Angela Duckworth, the author of Grit, and like, but I feel like at a certain level, all grit should bow before events people, because your lives are insane. Between like, there is no, what I tell my clients and candidates all the time, right? Like, yes, crunch is crunch. And maybe you have to work 60, 70 hour weeks during crunch. But if you're in crunch all the time, you're doing something wrong. Unless you're in events, and in events, it's always crunch. Like there is never, the planning stage is frantic. Then the execution stage is frantic. And then if you don't have another one that you're planning right after that, then you're not going to eat the next month. And right. How do you survive literally in events? Because you're not just surviving, you're thriving as a professional. and you're a mom, which like I can barely do laundry and hold on, down a job as a recruiter as a mom. I can't even imagine an event. So how literally how do you survive in this world doing all of those things?
Well, for starters, you addressed so many different things. So I think I'll go back to the... No, it's okay. And my memory, I'm getting older, you know. So the one thing is, you're right. I booked 2 years out easy, especially when you're doing your bar and bat mitzvahs and your weddings. And well, weddings are more of a year, but a lot of events, corporate, you're getting dates far in advance and you're proposing. And that process can go on for 2 to 3 years. I mean, if you're doing something large, you know, your Olympics and all that, that whole bidding process, you start with the bidding process and then it goes all the way through with most corporations and big events, city events. So yes, it's the gift that keeps on giving and you're done with one and then you're waking up and doing another, or in many cases I've actually done 3 in a weekend with different clients or with the same client. You're doing 7-day programs, plus you have multiple programs going on in different cities, states, countries, whatever it may be. So you need support staff, obviously. Being a one-woman show is great, but you're going to burn yourself out. So in those cases, yeah, 3 to 5 years, you're probably done. So for me, I get off on all of the end product, so much so that I get off on the beginning, I get off somewhere in the middle of it, and I get off somewhere with the event itself. When I walk into a room and I see the lighting coming together and the entertainers coming together and getting and the client walking into the room, the guests walking into the room and seeing their faces, it makes it all worthwhile. And then it's like having a baby. Okay, you get knocked up, you're in pain, you kind of forget about it, you're through the first trimester and it sucks, you're sick, then second trimester, you're like awkward and uncomfortable and you're like in between stages so people don't know if you're pregnant or not. And then you get into third trimester and everyone knows you're pregnant, you're super excited, but the truth is that your back hurts, your neck hurts, your feet hurt, and you don't fit in anything anymore. And then you have a C-section or a regular delivery and you're like, this is the most pain I've ever felt my entire life. And you're like, give me more drugs, but I'm nursing and I can't have alcohol and it just sucks. So, but then you get knocked up again. You do it again. I've never actually said that before, but I truly believe it's like giving birth.
Okay. Except that like, that it doesn't follow you. The event doesn't follow you around for 18 to 20 years after that. Like it does.
Best part.
And I feel like in events, maybe the best advice I ever had when I was pregnant was at one point, because my pregnancies were just miserable like the whole time. There was no good point. I did never had that like, oh, I'm growing a little human in me and I'm glowing. I never glowed the whole time. There's no glow. But at one point, my gynecologist said to me, Michelle, here's the good news. You won't be pregnant forever. It will end. All pregnancies end. And I was like, that is the most relieving idea that I have ever had. And I feel like it's probably the same in events. Like, I know this is awful. I know you hate everything about this client, these vendors, this venue, but it will end. Saturday night will come. Little Tommy will have a bar mitzvah. Good, bad, ugly, and then it will be over and it will be Sunday.
Amen.
And I feel and like
I always have that victory drink at the end with my staff where we just take our shoes off and put our feet up and the bartender gives us a drink. And that is the best moment because you could take it all in.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. So, okay. So many questions. Myths, let's go through some of the myths about events. One, do you get free swag? Do you get to have a goodie bag?
I have a lot of samples collection with a lot of people's logos on it. It's not the nicer, higher end swag that I get, but the other perk of being an event planner is that we also get wined and dined and swagged and pampered by the hoteliers, the venues, the destination management companies. And so we we might be working with clients, but we also are clients to others. So we get to, it kind of comes full circle. And the reality is the event industry, when you're in it for a long time and really active, it's your family. It becomes your family.
So that's really interesting because you have been in the events industry for a long time, but you have done it all over the world. So how do you do that? How do you show up in New York and be like, hey, New York family, I'm gonna be a big events planner here. And then 10 months later, be like, peace out, New York. I'm going to Phoenix. Like, how does that work with you creating those new families every time when you move?
Well, so I'm looking forward to working in Asia, which is actually coming up. I just, going to be doing something pretty exciting there. So that's in the books. And so being able to go to Japan means I'm going to be touching base with other planners and destination management companies, let's say, for that job. So what that means for me is, number one, being part of the organizations from the get-go has been great since 1998. So it used to be called International Special Events Society, which was ISES. They ended up having to change it for obvious reasons. So they changed it to International Live Events Association. And so it's international. So there are event planners and destination management companies and venues and vendors all over the world that are in your Rolodex, as we like to say in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And so that helps. And then NACE is National Association of Catering and Events. So that's within the US. But then when I lived in Canada, they have ILEA's there, but they also have Canadian organizations. And because there's so much of Asia that comes to Canada, there's a lot of collaboration there. Then you have meeting planners and international MPI, same thing. You've got people all over. So it really, the world becomes much smaller when you're working events, if you have friends in all places. And so being really active in those organizations is key. And also being part of social media. So for my social media, I have wedding planners and people who do decor and entertainment in Israel and in Italy and in Paris and all over through social media, and bridging those relationships and staying in touch with people, sharing ideas, photos, commenting on people's photos and what they've done, and then creating partnerships with them. That's the key. It's really relationship building.
So is there, you make it sound like it's very kumbaya and we're all one big happy family and we all love each other, but there also has to be like some natural competition, right? Like I know in recruitment on LinkedIn, we're all like, yay, recruiters. Or actually there's two factions. There's the, we're the good guy recruiters. Those guys are douchebags. And then there's the other side that are like, we're just trying to do our job and don't care. Guess which side I'm in. But broadly, like we all play nicely in that pool. But also I know when I was an agency recruiter, I would be like, I'm not talking to people from Randstad because that's my competition. Y'all bitches can stay over there. There has to be like, you are competing ultimately for some of the business. So how do you get past the competition and into kumbaya? Like, what does that look like and feel like in the industry?
So it's actually funny because I've come across so many different types of competitors throughout my career and all the cities I've lived in. And I love how during COVID, everybody was like, hashtag collaboration, not competition. I was like, I've been doing that my whole life. You guys, it's not my fault that you weren't cool before, but I invented cool. I invented collaboration. It makes me sick, honestly. I mean, yes, there's bidding processes. Yes, you're going to have competition, but the benefit of knowing your competition and friending your competition is you kind of know their strengths and weaknesses. But here's what's also interesting. What's also interesting is as an event planner owner, I was able to collaborate with other event planners. I have had other event planners work alongside me at my events when I don't have the right staff. Mm-hmm. And same with them. I mean, I don't do weddings. I did some because people really wanted me to do them. And I'm like, you have to beg me. And they did. And I was like, fine. So I did those weddings, but I got to work alongside one of my best friends, Kat Creech from Kat Creech Events in Houston. She does some of the most spectacular Indian weddings, elephants, helicopters, you name it, coming in Houston. And I'm her assistant. Hello. Like, I would never be doing an Indian wedding otherwise. And I learned so much about the traditions and so much about the process and how the wedding is like 5 hours, you know, in the not 5 days.
I'd and say the service like 2 weeks.
Is 5 hours. Yeah. Well, like the service, yeah. the ceremonies are very long.
So busy weddings are the best.
Right. So you learn so much from others, and then you know that you can trust them because they're business owners or they're executives at, you know, companies. I mean, when you're working for another company, you don't have that much leeway, but when you're working with other owners, collaboration is key, which is probably why I win all the team event awards, because I'd rather do things as a team.
That's so impressive to me. So one of the things you've mentioned a couple of times that I have all the questions about is this bid process. There is no way on God's green earth that somebody could describe to me an event and I would have any form of a Scooby-Doo clue how much that would cost to make a thing. Like, just, I got nothing, Samara. I'd be like, I don't know. How about $1 billion? That seems right. Like, no idea. What factors do you look at when you're putting together a bid, and how do you learn that process other than by screwing up? Like, more specifically, how did you learn how to do that?
So first off, nobody knows their real budget unless they do them all the time. So like when I work with pharmaceutical companies and they're doing meetings constantly and they have a good idea with the budget and they're budgeting a year in advance for the next year. So they really have their act together. But every city is different. So are you including attrition? Are you including inflation? Are you including COVID, terrorist attacks, all the things that can happen before an event in a city? I mean, people did not include in their budgets what the cost of shipping increases and product increases and gas increases and not being able to get staff increases, the fact that restaurants are closed within a hotel that's a five-star hotel. I mean, even Michelin star restaurants are understaffed. Never imagined that in a million years. And I was in New York City September 11th during the blackout. Like, I've been there for a lot of things happening. I've lived in Houston during hurricanes. Like, you just don't expect all that. And yes, you can have your contracts and all that, but that doesn't change the reality of you have to expect the unexpected. And pretty much no one ever does when they're dealing with budgets. And that's unfortunate because the unexpected always happens. It may not be as large as what we're dealing with now, but you're always going to be spending more money on something. You're always going to say, I have to have this. Or my CEO said, we have to have this. So whatever it costs. So I think people need to start putting buffers in their budgets a little better. I'm working with nonprofit right now where the budgets are very, very low. And, you know, when they did the budgets, did they realize that maybe donors are going to be less or more due to the economy? So there's so many things that impact your budget. And the reality is anyone doing a social event has zero concept. And I don't care if you've done a wedding before and this is your second daughter, nothing ever costs the same the second time around, unless you're doing it cookie cutter, everything's exact. So what I try to do, first of all, as an event planner owner, when I'm, you know, running my own events for clients, is I do a full-blown budget spreadsheet and I don't let them write a check, not one, until that's done. And I always say, okay, here is your wish list. Here's your high end. Here's all the things that you want to happen. Call it your Pinterest board. I want the $5,000 cake, but only have a $1,000 budget, whatever it may be.
Sure.
Which is very realistic to everybody.
Believe me. So my husband and I get remarried every 5 years. So I know we're schmaltzy that way. But so every 5 years we have this whole thing where like we put all of our cards on the table and I'm like, and then you didn't put down the toilet seat and then you didn't walk the dog. Like all of the grievances get aired. We clean out all of it. And then if at the end of that, we would still marry each other all over again, we do.
That's so fantastic.
Thank you. So I have planned several weddings for myself.
I better be invited to the next one.
You better believe it. Screw that, Samara. Now I know who's planning the next one, because I ballsed up the last one. Oh my God, it was awful. I was all but pregnant. And my caterer screwed up. It was an absolute cluster. So you're just in charge next time. But no, so, and I've done that, and I've done my sister's wedding. I helped with that. And it just, I totally, having just walked a mile in those shoes, I know whatever you thought you were going to spend, forget about it. Just forget about it. And like, having done several of them, I absolutely understand where people like you earn every penny that you cost. That A, my experience is that event planners are better at negotiating than you are.
Yeah.
They have better suppliers than you do. They're better at actually estimating how much you need. So you don't, like with my sister's wedding, end up with, and this is not an exaggeration, 10 extra cases of wine, both red and white. So, well, 20 total.
Do you want my address?
It was a few years ago now, so I don't think you want the wine, but that's the kind of thing that happens to normal mortals, right? And that doesn't happen when you have somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. And so like, you do wind up paying for yourself in that process. But when you're doing that spreadsheet, is it just like, you just have to have been around the block a few times, and that's how you know what to estimate for food or what to estimate for venue and the peripheral shit they have? No, I wouldn't even know how to get an elephant, let alone price an elephant, like,
or feed it,
right? Or clean up after it.
Is there a pooper scooper for an elephant? Right? I don't really know.
Let alone adorning the elephant, right? Like,
let's talk about the elephant in the room here. Okay, to the answer to that question, yeah. I mean, it helps. First of all, when you're doing your budgeting and you're looking at venues and doing price comparisons on your venues and your hotels, you just want to put the food and beverage minimum to buy out the space, make sure you have the green rooms and all the spaces that you need, if you need hospitality and meeting rooms as well. So that's very important. And then making sure you're adding on tax and gratuity. And in some cities, they tax the gratuity. And remember, taxes change a lot. So you might've done an event in a city 5 years ago, but the tax might've increased. So, we might even be seeing more of that happening post COVID. I hope not, but it could be. So with all the changes and the variables, yes, it can go like this. However, if you've done events within a category so many times, you basically take the old spreadsheet, make it the new spreadsheet, and you update it. That will save you lots of time, and it provides the knowledge. Then you have your planners who receive discounts and such from those suppliers and vendors. That's years and years and years of relationship building. So you don't get that. And you have to be careful what you pay for. If I had a dollar for every single client that hired food trucks on their own, or their own DJ, or a cousin as the photographer or the videographer, and it fell through that week or even the night before by text, you know, like Sex and the City, where he broke up with her on a post-it. Like, this is basically suppliers texting vendors now and saying, sorry, we're not available. Actually, just happened to a friend of mine for his poor 3-year-old's birthday party. He was supposed to have Buzz Lightyear. Got the text saying, sorry, Buzz Lightyear is not available. We can't help you with your party. Are you willing to switch the theme? Really? Really? The party's Saturday. Okay. Yeah. So he immediately called me. And of course, one phone call and Buzz Lightyear not available right now because the costume is not available. However, guess who they're getting? Woody. So it's not a total. And the little boy is super excited. How can you do that to a 3-year-old right before his birthday? So that wouldn't happen if you used my professional vendors.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. Like, the people, so I learned this lesson in a adjacent way. When we immigrated from the UK, we brought nothing with us. We wanted a full reset. So the only thing we brought were my husband's ridiculous video game consoles because he has all of them. So we brought those, but that was it. And so we hired an interior decorator to help. And what we found was that she paid for, yes, we wrote checks to her, but she saved us so much more than what we paid her. And my house is really pretty nice. It looks like somebody knew what the hell they were doing, right? And it was definitely not this chick. So I was like, I don't know. I mean, I like teal a lot. She was like, okay, let's make that not suck. So I feel like it's probably a very similar thing in your world, that between your discounts and your lack of, you know, totally unprofessional vendors that flake on you at the last second, et cetera, that one comes out ahead, which then brings me to the next question I have along those lines. It seems like everybody has a cousin that's a wedding planner. See my air quotes. Or an event planner, right?
Plan their own wedding.
Yes. But everybody will tell you, oh, I'm an event planner. Oh, I've done it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
How in the hell do you know who in the age of anybody can make a website, right? Anybody can go sign up to be a vendor on the Knot or on one of the other like social, like how do you as a consumer separate the Yahoos with a clipboard from you?
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that go along with, if you're a true planner with a corporation, LLC, whatever it may be. First of all, I would do a search. You could do a search for LLCs and corporations.
They gave me an LLC, Samara. It's not that high of a bar.
I know, but just make sure they're legit that way. But also they should be insured. So I have insurance, event insurance. So, you know, if I'm working a venue and I ruin a carpet, you know, I'm covered. So if I'm at doing a house party, which I've done some very, very nice mansion house parties, and I ruin something in their house or break
that main vase,
you need to be insured. Your company needs to be insured. Your staff need to be insured. Certificates of insurance for all your vendors need to be coming in. So that's really important, but also experience. So the problem is with the internet now, people can pull anyone's pictures and call it their own. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't trust the websites. I wouldn't trust any of that. I would meet with them in person or via Zoom. I would ask real questions, do your research, and number one, I would definitely get as many testimonials and referrals as you can through people who've used them directly, not through someone who knows someone who used someone, because a lot of times that is the cousin. Mm-hmm. So, and that, or it's not a professional. And there's a lot of people who plan their wedding and they're like, oh my God, I had so much fun planning my wedding. It's my dream wedding. And now I want to do weddings. It's one thing to be the client. Mm-hmm. And entertain your family and friends. It's another to be working with clients.
Yes. And I know the same thing is true with the corporate events, right? Like I have seen so many people in HR. One of my favorite HR people always refers to the like company Christmas party stuff. She refers to that as ducks and bunnies. She's like, for some reason, all the ducks and bunnies wind up being HR's problem. Like, oh, the spring company picnic and the Christmas party and the whatever it is. And so I have seen so many people who were an HR administrator or something like that, who planned the company Christmas party 3 years in a row. And then they're like, I know all about corporate events, and then made a website and went out. Not the same, not the same. And so I think that this idea of like having multiple people who attended different events and clarify that they were different events is probably a good choice. But also everybody has to start. So based on your logic there, what I'm hearing is that nobody should start in events with their own business. They should start by working for somebody else. Do I have that right?
Yes. And I've had five interns working for me plus paid staff. I paid the interns too, but you full-time staff, whatever it may be. So I recommend, first of all, there's a couple of recommendations I give because I've been on all sides of the table. Okay. Sure. I have been person who chairs a ton of events, for private schools, for religious organizations, for whatever. I've been paid to come in and do the events for nonprofits. I have been the client who's had a wedding, which my mom wanted to plan because I was a New York City event planner getting married. This was 21 years ago. And my mom's like, well, you get to do this all the time. This is my turn. This is our wedding. And I was the only girl. I'm the only girl. So my mom took it, and she's in Baltimore anyway. So it worked out because the wedding was in Baltimore, and I was living in Charleston, South Carolina at the time with my husband, who was in submarine school, and we couldn't fly in until right before. Michael flew in an hour before the rehearsal dinner because he had an exam. Yeah. So, and I just came like the week before. So in that particular case, we had a day of planner who had planned actually all of my brother's bar mitzvahs. And she's very in the know. And my mom's known her for years. She's been around forever. So she was our day of planner. My mom did all the pre-planning. Then the day of planner is really a month of planner. I hate when they call it a day of planner because it's really not even a month of. It's like 2 months before when you have to get all the contracts, see all the things that fell through, which happens a lot because I do my diligence. I follow up with all the vendors, whatever. And then you show up and you make it all happen. Even my wedding, my mom plans conferences. I'm a corporate event planner in New York City. The planner, wedding planner that we had for month of, she's been doing this for decades. Okay. Even at my wedding, when we were supposed to have a horse and carriage show up to take us to our hotel from the Belvedere in Baltimore.
It's an elephant instead.
It was, I wish, an elephant. That would have been so cool. It had rained earlier in the day. And as someone who does horse and carriages in Central Park, we know that if it rains up to a certain point, they don't run. Mm-hmm. But in Baltimore, I was in the venue all day since morning. I didn't even know it was raining that day. Okay. Oh. But I wasn't in charge. All I had to do was do my hair and makeup and drink champagne and get pampered by my 18 or 16 bridal party. So I had no idea it was even raining. And the horse and carriage, nobody realized because it had rained earlier in the day that they canceled or weren't going to show up. They didn't show up. I am out there. I had changed into a new dress, my going away dress and all this stuff. And we're ready to go. We get outside and there's all these bubbles, no horse and carriage. So my dad, after a lot of drinks, goes, I got this. He goes to the garage to get the Cadillac. I'm like, what? My dad, he's so drunk, but he's like, I'm not doing this. And so he goes to get the car out of the garage. And while he's doing that, all my New York City people and all my friends hailed a checkered, yellow and black checkered taxi cab in Baltimore, which was perfect. And they're blowing bubbles and all that. And I'm laying on the hood of the cab. And we realized we didn't have any money on us. So everyone from the wedding is blowing bubbles, just throwing 20s and hundreds at us. We ended up making a profit off of that, by the way. And so we had a ride. And meanwhile, my dad comes up with the car.
Oh my God. But Samara, that's the best story. Like I feel like sometimes the thing that went horribly, egregiously wrong, right, is the best story of the whole thing. Cause that's an amazing story. I feel like there's less of that at corporate events. That like your world is not the one where people are like, oh, but wasn't it touching and sweet when that thing went wrong? It's a thing where everybody is already extremely judgy about being there.
Yeah.
Half the people are there because somebody told them they had to be and not because they wanted to be. Right. And so they're like, oh my God, last year we had better shrimp than this. Ew. Right. Like that's the corporate event world. So how do you handle it in the corporate event world when shit inevitably goes wrong? Right. How do you help them find
a sense of humor? And I apologize if my sound changes now. My microphone got disconnected here. So, yeah, I mean, listen, if I had my black t-shirts, my tech guys here, I wouldn't have to be worrying about the fact that my microphone just decided to go out and now I'm using the AirPods, but you just roll with it. The show must go on.
Absolutely. COVID. And, am I right?
Right. Have you heard about COVID? It's this thing. There's like physical distancing and stuff. So the thing with us is we have to be on our toes and on our feet. And the clients, if you're working with professional corporate clients and they do this all the time, they know that stuff is going to go wrong. And they hire people who know how to do crisis management, who know how to be on their toes at all times, you know how to handle situations. There's so much that can happen at an event. And I usually, it's funny, but when I walk into a venue with my staff, when we first load in all of our stuff, I say, okay, guys, let's see what goes wrong and how we're going to fix it. Because you can have them as beautiful paperwork and it's so pretty and all this stuff and it looks perfect and you've got your color-coded highlights, whatever, and you could have it memorized. But it will be a mess by the end of that event. It'll be folded in 15 different directions. It's going to have pen marks all over it, Sharpie. It's going to have alcohol spilled on it from the guests who just kind of like went up to you and had an issue. And it's not about perfection. And with events, it's about how do you handle the situations and how can you make it happen? And the reason why you need to hire a professional for any meetings and events is because we handle those situations and we have the right partners there who will do anything for us because we're consistently working with them and we have that relationship. Or they might be new partners to you, but they want to work with you. So that's one reason. The second reason why you want to work with professionals is because if you're hiring somebody that you know to do your meeting, event, or company holiday party, and they get toasted at the event, or they get all crushed on one of your employers or employees, what's going to happen? They're not paying attention to the logistics. So that's a problem. So you have to have the right people there to make sure that they have all eyes on everything.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And I feel like as a corporate entity or any kind of like official entity, like having a professional handle all of it instead of shoving your ducks and bunnies at the HR is a really good way to make sure it goes well. For a corporate organization, like what do they need to budget for a Samara to do all of that for them?
Well, $10 million, of course.
Easy. Is that limit. Per event or is that like annual?
Well, I mean, if you want the elephants and the helicopters for each guest, so we're going to be transferring them and having them all on sailboats and, you know, doing a little...
We were looking at a resume for an event planner the other day in the company, and there was a typo and somebody had said that it was $180 billion event. I was like, I don't know what that event was, but I want to attend.
I was going to say, I don't want to work that event.
I cannot even imagine what you would have to do to spend $180 billion, but I definitely want to be part of it because that sounds so redonkulously over the top. It must be amazing. Like everybody gets their own hotel. You get a hotel, not just like for the night. We just bought it for you.
We'll just buy you a boutique hotel.
Yeah.
The whole block. We're buying the block for each person. So I would say number one, I have turned down jobs because I'd rather be a guest than the planner. And that's like fair. Company holiday parties where I've been like, you know what? I was going to be a guest. It might've been my husband's company or whatever. So that is one thing I have done. You have to be careful too. If it's a conflict of interest, you have to be very conscientious along those lines. Budgeting really depends on your parameters and what you want to delegate. So you mentioned HR people. So executive assistants, EAs, and HR managers at companies are my clients as often as meeting planners because they get delegated. And now with COVID where people were laid off, I'm going to tell you now, you're wearing a gazillion hats at every single job right now until they can fill those positions. And people are just not, for some reason, applying or interviewing. I'm not sure what's going on there. But with all of that, even way before COVID, a lot of times a CEO, executives, they like to have their personal assistant, their executive assistant to be the planner, a smart EA, a smart HR person. They're going to delegate out because you know what? Their plate is going to be so full. And I work with them all the time. Sometimes we become the best of friends and we do lunch and dinner right before the event or after the event because we work so closely together. And those are the individuals that are going to be your client who are going to create the Excel spreadsheets of the lists of the guests. Mm-hmm. They're going to get you all you need for the invitations. They're going to get you, you know, help you with the show flow and make sure that the show flow is relevant to what the team is used to having the hierarchy, to having the correct spelling. Does he like to go by doctor? Do we have to have a PhD at the end? You have to work closely with your HR and EAs because they should be your best friends. And same with the meeting planners. Meeting planners within companies, and I've worked with many in the pharmaceuticals, but meeting planners are your best friend because they have a lot of the knowledge. They do this frequently. They understand that the AV is required, that you have to have a certain number of screens, that you have to have screens in all parts of the ballroom because people aren't going to all turn their chairs, you know, whatever it may be, they get it. So there's just so many levels. And as far as budgeting, there isn't one budget. It's even, you know,
I didn't know if it was like whatever you thought you're going to spend, add additional 25%. And that's your event planner budget. Like, I didn't know. That sort of thing.
So the way I charge, and it really does depend on the event, but I charge flat rate packages based on what we're doing and the time and the elements, but then there's always add-ons and optionals. And so that is one way for me to protect myself, number one. And then I actually, in many cases, take the cost of services, the cost of products, and kind of give it on to my clients. So kind of a pass through in a sense, or have in many cases, because I used to do all the billing underneath my own company, mm-hmm. I kind of smartened up at one point because of the
that seems fraught with
nickel and diming, or I'm going to use a DJ through someone else. I didn't want it to go through my company because there was a lot of liability. And then if they canceled, then I'm responsible to pay the vendor, and the client changed their mind because they went to another event and that person was there. So there's a lot of things with liability that forced me to smarten up. And I'm glad I did. Where with social events, I'm usually selling myself first. You contract, you pay my deposit. Then we're going to go through the process. It's a little different with corporate though, if you're bidding. So.
Sure. That makes sense though. It's fascinating to me. Like, it, you know, in my world, it's like events is you show up, you eat cake. And then if you're me, you leave as soon as humanly possible.
Really?
I'm such an introvert, Samara. Like, what? If there is not a dog for me to sit in the corner and pet, I want to peace out as soon as humanly possible, really.
Wow.
And it's even worse in some ways when like people, like now people think they know me. And so like they're like, oh my God, I saw your podcast, or oh my God, I saw your AMA. And I'm like, They're like, you're the girl that knows all the things and says bad words. I'm like, well, I do say a lot of bad words. That you got me. Like, you're looking for some bossy profanity slinging, you come to the right chick. But like, oh, I can't. I get so embarrassed about all of it. And I never know what to say to people. I'm the worst social networker ever. And I've been in sales forever. Like one-to-one, fine. Room of 50 people, forget about it. Like, absolutely. Like, I'm in the corner, like, I'm just going to stand here with my glass of water because I don't even drink at any, I don't drink at any kind of corporate anything because I'm always afraid I'm going to have like that one drink too many and be that chick. And you know that chick that I'm talking about. I am not being that chick. So I have little enough filter when I'm sober. But yeah, all of this is just like completely fascinating to me. So you talked a lot about like you had somebody in Baltimore on the ground, but then you've done corporate for lots of different places, lots of different big organizations. Is it in 2021 important that your event planner be geographically local to either you or the event?
That's a great question, Michelle. No.
Okay.
But it does make people feel better. If you can go to an office or meet someone at the venue for walkthroughs, yes, you need to have boots. Whether you're doing a FAM trip, which is a familiarization trip, that we do in our meeting planning destination world, or if you are doing a big event or meeting, you should be doing site tours. So you definitely want to go there. You want to build a repertoire. You want to have the relationships locally in that state, city, country, whatever it may be. So I think that that's incredibly important, and you need a backup plan if that person falls through, especially now with 2021, you don't even know who's going to be in business in a year. You have to have a plan A and a plan B, and you have to be able to cover it. If all else fails, I need to get on a plane and I need to go to Japan and make sure that this is happening and that everyone understands that I'm still here, and then try to have other partners. But micromanaging is a bit of an issue too with event planners. A lot of us type A OCD personalities make us good event planners, but micromanaging,
that's I don't know anything about those personality traits at all, Samara. I'm very laid back.
Honey, where's your husband? He's your IT guy.
Busy with the children.
Delegating. I like it.
That's right.
So it's also good though to have that sense of letting go and delegating and letting some of that control go to the professional. So in another case, if you have that person who's in your city, you know, they're not going to have as many meetings as you think. Like some people think, oh, I'm going to meet with my event planner all the time. It's virtual now for many meetings. I mean, gosh, even my lawyers, I've never met in person. So it's a virtual world. You got to run with it. And I'm also doing virtual and hybrid events. So when you're doing that, you may never meet a single person. That's a panelist, a speaker, your IT person, your partners. I have business partners all over. So there's a lot now that's so virtual that you have to kind of run with that. And you have to do your diligence and your research and make sure you're working with the right people. So get references. There's nothing wrong with that.
So that's a great question, because I have been to, at this point, many online events. I have not been to any that were awesome. I have been to career fairs. They blew. I've been to, my husband's company had an online Christmas party.
Wow. Fun.
It was a brave and bold move. I wouldn't call it a good one, but it was bold as anything. They had a DJ, and bless her heart, she sat there with her headphones like wiki wiki for you to dance in your own home to. Like, I can't even begin to tell you, Samara. It was terrible. What is there out there right now from a virtual or online event perspective that would not suck, that you would, if a company came to you and was like, okay, it is October, which means it's getting to be company Christmas party time. My husband's company, giant hyper global megacorp, comes to you and says, we hear you have a better idea than the DJ awkwardly sitting on Zoom mixing at you. What is out there? What are they not doing? What would you recommend? I'll send you the video. It was amazing.
I have an amazing mixologist that can make that a little better. And she does it all virtually too. So there's a lot of things you can do. So first of all, I have, I'm working with a company where we're layering over Zoom to make it more interactive and customized, where it's not just a Zoom, it's fully customizable. It's being used by Tony Robbins and Grant Cardone and a lot of other big players, because you're able to bring in many more people, and it's international, but you know, you can bring in like 10,000 people instead of having the maximum of a pro account. So there's a lot more things that you can do with breakout rooms and engagement and making it a competition with leaderboards and polls and surveys. And then I also do seminars and workshops. I teach, ironically, on networking and being more of an extrovert. So even if you're an introvert, so Michelle, I'd like to see you at a future seminar of mine. Freak out mode.
I will come to any seminar you invite me to. That is a promise, Samara.
Thank you. Well, and I know this won't come to a shock, but we just kind of met. I'm usually the first on the dance floor and the last to leave the bar. So just the party. I'm so social.
You are the party, I'm sure.
I love it. And I love throwing the VIP receptions. Even if I'm not being paid to many times, I will be mingling afterwards. When I do board of directors events and meetings where I'm touring, traveling with the boards, even though I don't work for the board, I'm actually a a third party vendor as an event planning contractor, but I come in and the whole board knows me. And if I'm not there at one of the cities, cause there's a conflict, where's Samara? How come she's not here? Or I'll come to the next city and they're like, we missed you. Where were you? You missed what we did. And they tell me all about it. And they ask about my kids and I know their kids. And it's that, having that relationship, even with your guests, is really important too, with your executives. And so that's why I am bringing in so many more elements to the virtual world, the hybrid world, so people can feel like they're kind of part of the party. But I'm going to tell you, Michelle, in all honesty, I have RSVP'd for virtual events, conferences, and trade shows and not shown up, or multitasked and not really been fully there and present, or I haven't. Maybe I did one day and not the rest. And I even missed friends of mine who were presenters and I feel awful because the commitments are out of control.
Have you been watching me? Is this like, is there a camera somewhere that you have seen my life? Because that's a little close to the bone. I'm not going to lie.
I'm also very observant and notice
no blue, your favorite color.
Sorry.
I lost my microphone.
There you go.
Sorry. Hold on. Hold, please.
Holding.
Listen to my my hold music. River.
Beyonce, you're not. Your microphone is, yeah, there you go.
Very tone deaf. Very tone deaf. What I was saying is I noticed your office is teal, which you do enjoy based on your events. So I would know that I need to send you something. If I get you a gift, it's going to be something in teal and I'm going to customize it to my clients and to my guests. And I'm going to have a gift sent to you prior to my virtual event. It's going to be just a box of fun. It's going to have the mixers and the things you need in the glasses to make the drinks. And I'm going to have the mixologist there making it instead of saying, oh, we're going to make a mojito. Make sure you have everything. Who's going to go and get all the ingredients for the recipe? No one, except for the person who's running the event. That's the only person who's going to do it. So sending customized logo programs, gifts to the door, get them excited, make it a competition, have leaderboards, have people interact and engage, bring in entertainment and have the entertainment entertain your guests instead of you doing it. Have the little signs and all the things that you can do. There's so much that you can do with that and then interact with social media, which helps your corporate presence. There's a lot of things that you can do and a lot of activations were created and invented literally in the last year. So if you work with professionals, you're going to be getting professional vendors who have come up with creative ideas. And what has evolved since COVID is miraculous and it's going to keep going. It's not going away. Hybrid, virtual, not going away because most of us now have an international following.
That is amazing. And I'm going to try to make my husband get his company to hire you because I don't want any more lame. That's amazing. So we are almost out of time. What have I not asked you that I should have asked you? I agree. Pouty face.
I know. Pouty face. I feel like we need to resume. I would say, no, I mean,
we've covered so much.
We did cover a lot and I have just so much energy. I feel like I need to go out. I got dressed for you. I put on hair and makeup.
Wear pants and everything.
I did. So I kind of feel like I need to just do something now because I have so much energy from you, Michelle. You're contagious. And I love that you're wearing a Grateful Dead shirt. You'll be so shocked by this because, you know, I look like I'm like so... I know, right? I'm very, you know, junior league. I wasn't in junior league. I actually was a big Grateful Dead Phish fan and saw Grateful Dead in concert. Bob Dylan opened in DC before Jerry died. And Phish is actually in Phoenix this weekend.
But I'm Are you going?
Because I have no one to go with. So I know. I just moved to Phoenix, to Scottsdale, right before COVID from Vancouver, British Columbia. And I don't have a lot of friends here that I know. I work a lot and I got the kids and stuff. And I just, you know, I just kind of wait.
You can't make the kids go with you. Be like, come on, education time.
Not taking them to a Phish concert. I took them to Pentatonix. That's safe.
We took my godchildren to that. It was definitely for them and not for me.
How could you not be so aca awesome with acapella? Come on.
I love acapella. Just not that particular flavor. I don't know. They just don't do it for me.
I got
you. Well, I will not make you stay chained to that seat anymore. I think we should unleash your wild. Thank you so much for joining me. It was amazingly fun. And I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
I guess I should put a little disclaimer. I can chill out as needed.
Lying. That is not true. Evidence to the contrary. Anyway, thank you so much. Thanks, Ma.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Hey, I Want Your Job. For more information on how you can get your own awesome job, visit ONH Consulting at www.onhconsulting.com. We offer incredible resumes, no-nonsense career advice, and real-world tips for landing a job in today's market. Check us out on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Insta for more insider information. Soon, you'll be hearing us say, I'm Michelle Olivier, and hey, I want your job.